Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, August 10th, 2016. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the podcast, we're welcoming back Eric Anderson, who's going to talk to us about his Universal Orlando and Walt Disney World combined vacation. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Hey, Aaron. Thanks for having me back.
So you kind of tackled the whole enchilada here. You got both the Universal parks in, you got all four Disney parks, you stayed on both properties. I'm really interested to hear kind of, you know, what the setup for this was, right? How, first of all, how far out did you start putting together plans for a basically six parks in 1 week vacation?
Let's see. I started this back probably before my kids' spring break. So this was early March, I guess, was probably when we started putting it together. Some of the stuff was right up to the end because I originally had planned it for us to be flying down, and I was going to leverage Magical Express to get us to the Disney side.
Right.
Starting out, then move over to Universal in the middle, then go back out to the Disney parks to finish up.
Okay, so you could get your Magical Express back out.
So that was the way I originally planned it out. I thought that was somewhat economical from the perspective of not having to get transport to and from the airport. However, I decided the more economical thing would be to drive down eventually. So the
value of the Magical Express couldn't overcome the value of driving versus flying.
Exactly. And it just ended up being more efficient to book in to one side of the Orlando theme park scene for the beginning and then move over in the middle, less moving.
Sure.
And sort of more contiguous time at each place.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm definitely a fan of, you know, one less time packing up. I enjoy the resort hop thing, but I think I've learned that generally speaking, you know, one hop per trip is enough for me.
Yeah. And, that was mostly okay, except by the time I'd figured that out, I actually had to swap out hotels.
Oh, no.
I couldn't get actually a contiguous block at the same resort on Disney property. So I started out actually at Saratoga Springs for a few days and then moved over to Animal Kingdom Lodge for the last weekend of the trip. So,
wow, okay.
That there was still a little bit of moving around to do, but it was at least blocks of time at each place without having to go back and forth.
Okay. So this vacation started at Universal. When was the last time that you'd been at Universal, you know, with the kids?
I had never actually been at Universal with the kids. So okay. The only time I'd been at Universal was for a disunplugged like after hours party.
Right.
That they rented out just basically the Harry Potter area.
Right. Yeah. They've done this a couple of times where they do the sort of Wizarding World after hours.
Exactly. So I'd been there with 400 or so people and this was back toward when it first opened up.
Right.
So there were kind of throngs of people there during the day, but at night it was a much smaller crowd to deal with. And so that was a good entree, I think, to the wizarding world of Harry Potter.
A little different experience being there, during regular operating hours in the middle of summer.
In the heat of the summer. Yeah, it was a little bit different, but it was still an enjoyable time. And my girls have been pretty big Harry Potter fans for the past couple of years, at least. I think they, now that the younger one has finished up the seventh book, it kind of like dropped off rapidly. So I was hoping they still had a little bit of interest going into this trip. I was trying to be excited for it the whole time, but it was waning, but it certainly hasn't waned as much as the Disney princess interest in the past couple of years. So
now, see, you could be in my shoes, because I was at the bookstore at, you know, we're recording this on August 1st. I was at the bookstore at midnight, I guess, technically last night, right? The 30th, the 31st.
Yeah.
For the release of the Cursed Child script.
Yes, yes. We will see how much they're into that, but it might boost that back up just in time for them to have been down there. But they were certainly into it when we were there, so that was a good thing.
Okay, so you're on property, you know, presumably for the first time, at least for the first time for any extended period, and you stayed at the Royal Pacific Resort. You're a veteran Disney traveler, so what did you think of the overall experience of Royal Pacific Resort on the Universal side as compared to your Disney, you know, resort hotel experiences?
It was certainly unfamiliar, and it was definitely less themed than at least the Disney Deluxe resorts. I think it would probably compare to a Disney Deluxe resort. But the theming just wasn't there. You certainly had some Polynesian touches to the place, but certainly nothing like the Polynesian at Walt Disney World. So yeah, some artwork, but that's like, about all you get.
Yeah, maybe a little more like Polynesian touches to a big resort hotel.
Yeah, exactly. So it did feel like a big conference hotel. There's some nice landscaping, but it was just right in the middle of everything. So there were other hotels right across the street, right down the block.
Right.
So it was, it definitely didn't, it did not feel like a sort of Disney immersive experience at all, but it was still a nice hotel room. Like, can't complain about that. They,
And the flip side to it, at least, what I've discovered about Royal Pacific is the travel from the resort to the parks is almost Disneyland-like.
Yes, I was. It did strike me as we walked over. It's a decently long path, especially again in the heat of late June, early July, definitely make you feel like you're doing some work. But the walk over and just how close the two parks, Universal Studios Park and Islands of Adventure, the entrances are just yards apart, I guess, really.
Yeah.
And that was very, very Disneyland like, especially with their shopping area basically right across the plaza there.
Right, right. Yeah, right across City Walk.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty quick walk. And they also have boat transportation, mm-hmm. A little channel there, which we did not take advantage of, but it's still there. You don't feel like walking back. You want to get under some cover.
Right. Well, no, I guess I've now stayed at all three of the Universal sort of, their primary resorts there. And I will say that Terry and I were at Portofino Bay this last time. And of the three, Portofino Bay is the one where that water taxi really is worth it, because it's the much, much longer walk. Which is a little backwards, right? It's the sort of flagship resort.
Right.
It's the one that's the biggest walk. I think Royal Pacific may be the closest, although, you know, Hard Rock is almost as close. They're just sort of each on the opposite side of the path that leads on into City Walk and then across to the parks. So yeah, I mean, either of them, you can walk it faster than the water taxi can carry you.
Right. And Portofino Bay, they probably figure that you will have people bearing you on a chair.
Yes. Terry and I did not have litter barriers or litter bearers. We tried. We just couldn't get those, you know. I think it was a language barrier. I mean, we figured because they didn't speak English, maybe we could convince them, but it didn't work.
Oh, well.
So you're walking across. Which park are you hitting first?
I wanted to hit Islands of Adventure first because that was where the Harry Potter stuff began.
Okay.
At Universal there. And really, it was all about Harry Potter. I mean, there's really, and that's true for most of the trip. The girls were not that interested in a lot of the other stuff.
Okay.
And that includes roller coasters. That includes, Dr. Seuss, the Seuss land area was a little young for them.
Yeah.
But mostly it was Harry Potter and especially Harry Potter shopping. So we made a beeline for the Harry Potter Forbidden Journey ride, basically. However, mm-hmm. we got sidetracked by Ollivander's Wand Shop on the way in.
Okay. So you're hitting now. I assume you were, you know, you'd gotten in the night before, so you were bright and early. Was this during the early admission that you get for being a resort guest?
Yeah, but just barely. I think we squeaked in before. We were there fairly early. We beat most of the crowd in. You certainly did not quite make it for Rope Drop.
Okay.
Or the functional equivalent thereof, but we definitely had a reduced amount of crowd participation when we got there. We probably got back to the Harry Potter area around 8:40 or so, I think, for an
okay.
park opening. And that was after a 10-15 minute walk.
Right. So you get sidetracked at Ollivander's Wand Shop. And what did you think of the Ollivander's Wand Shop show?
The worst thing is that my older daughter got picked to come up to the front.
Oh, no.
I say it's the worst thing because when the wand chooses your kid, how are you going to say no to buying the wand?
Of course.
I was kind of shaking my head all through the process, but and once you buy the older child the wand, that means the younger child is getting a wand as well. So I'm just exercising the Disney Visa at that point, hoping to recoup some Disney Rewards dollars later on. What was actually great about the wands is it did keep them busy during any time when, like, one of them was going to the bathroom or one of them wanted to do one thing that the other one did not want to do. There are a bunch of little spells you can cast around the Harry Potter area.
Right. It's sort of their version or their answer to the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game.
Exactly. I was going to say it's a vague parallel to the things like the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom or the games you can play on the cruise ships, the detective.
Oh, right. Yeah, the detective agency.
So, but these were engaging for the kids. They had a lot of, team members standing around to assist because you ended up with people not being able to quite get the spells done. And there were apparently little tips and tricks to make this work. They had people stationed there in heavy robes in the July heat.
I've heard that whatever the technology that they're using to, you know, detect the way you're waving your wand to make sure you're doing the spell right is apparently a little finicky.
Yeah. It's like, okay, you point at this rectangle of the window and point down and then it might work. So that was only occasionally frustrating, but it certainly was a bit of a time suck trying to get those things done again for both daughters. So, but they really enjoyed it, and it was probably money well spent for the wands, but it at least kept them entertained through the process and gave them something to look forward to moving over to the other park, because they also have some of the same spell casting opportunities.
Okay.
On the other side of Universal.
Right.
Universal Studios proper.
So you've done the wand shop. By the way, I don't know if you realized it at the time, because you did mention it being sidetracked, but if you'd asked me, I would have recommended that. The line at Forbidden Journey can get long, but the line at Ollivander's is much worse, because I don't know if you noticed, but it's almost totally exposed.
And the
capacity is tiny.
Yeah. We were, I think, third back in line. So it was a good target of opportunity. I said the girls mentioned it, and I looked at the line, and I wasn't sure if they opened with park open or when exactly they started doing operations. I was a little worried that it was like 10 o'clock because the line was so short, because I know that it does get a lot of attention, but they opened like 7 minutes after we got in line, I think. So
nice.
We were all set to go.
Okay. So you've gotten that out of the way, and then you're heading on to Forbidden Journey. So talk about the Forbidden Journey experience with a couple of, you know, young, sort of right in the prime, you know, Harry Potter fan, you know, in tow.
Well, they took a little while to get out there because they wanted to try out the wands on some of the spellcasting opportunities. But eventually got up there, got in line. My younger daughter, who was 9, balked a little bit at it when we finally got up there. She liked the queue. She enjoyed seeing the pictures on the wall that were, you know, like what you see in the Harry Potter movies.
Right, right. The portraits that come to life and talk to you. And
exactly. So these animated portraits were great. And my older daughter was into it. I was into actually riding the ride. But my younger daughter never really got into it. So we get through the whole process. And I personally, for me, I think the queue is better than the ride for this one, Forbidden Journey. The ride itself strikes me as sort of a combination of odd VR and being inside a washing machine.
Interesting description.
Yeah, it's anyway, it's interesting, certainly, but they seem to try to cram a lot of stuff into one ride experience. Which is fine. It's something that's unique, I think. But anyway, so I've got...
No, it's an interesting point. I haven't really thought about it much, but, you know, I mean, we kind of joke about many adventures of Winnie the Pooh being a little disjointed because they try and cram, you know, 3 different children's stories into one dark ride. When you ride Forbidden Journey, they're trying to cram about... 4,000 pages of story into the whatever 4-minute ride.
Yeah, and that was their whole shot at first, really. That was their themed ride. That was the original ride that they did over there. They repurposed a couple of roller coasters, right?
But yeah.
They just got sort of cosmetic tweaks to them. And but this was the make or break ride for Islands of Adventure, and they certainly, I think, pulled off the immersive experience really well. For me, though, the ride itself was just kind of weird, but I don't know. Older daughter liked it a lot. Younger daughter never got on, so
so no reaction from her.
But So I still count it as a win. I mean, I was surprised at how few rides they wanted to do throughout Universal, but
it sounds like they were still happy with just kind of being immersed in the world.
Exactly. They loved the dining experience. They went to the
Three Broomsticks on that side.
Leaky Cauldron. Was that?
Okay. Leaky Cauldron is on the Diagon.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually. So we didn't really duck in there for anything, but certainly hit all the shops. Went through the candy store because it's a candy store.
And were they like kids in a candy store?
Much like kids in a candy store, amazingly enough. Maybe me too, but so that was the only ride any of us did over there. My girlfriend and I swapped out with my younger daughter and in the child swap area, while my older daughter got to go on twice. So,
okay,
good for her.
Okay, well, so that was the Wizarding World there, and you mentioned that was really all they were interested in doing at Universal. Did you check out any of the other islands areas anytime in the Superhero Island or any of that?
No, they were really super focused on the Harry Potter stuff. And I figured, okay, it's the first day. We'll get the Harry Potter stuff out of the way and then can do other stuff the next day. Not a problem. That's fine. best laid plans, but, it was just one of those things where they saw all the stuff. We read through the maps, looked at everything, saw the roller coasters as we went by, saw the other rides. It's just, there was not that much there for them, really, that really was in their sweet spot.
So. Interesting. They were kind of in between, too old for the little kid stuff, and the sort of more high-intensity stuff was maybe a little more intense than they were quite ready for.
Yeah, and even the Harry Potter stuff, which I thought they would go for just based on the theming, they were really more interested in just looking at it, you know, and just kind of soaking in the being in the sort of Hogwarts experience.
Right.
Hogsmeade, Diagon Alley. They just really wanted to, I think, be a part of that.
Right.
And weren't as concerned about the ride experiences. So,
okay. So you've experienced the things on the Hogsmeade side, and it's going to be all about Harry Potter. They really didn't want to see anything else on Island. So I'm assuming that means that you took the Express.
Of course we did. that was the way to go. They were, excited about that. We rode it there and back again. After spending another part of the day over in, Hollywood Studio side, not Hollywood, Universal Studio side. But they did enjoy that. It's first time I'd ridden it, because my last visit predated that particular ride experience.
Right. Right.
Definitely, way to soak up money from people, because it's a way to get from one park to the other, but you've got to have entry to both parks, right?
Right. So, right.
It does. I feel like I want to make use of it. So we'll go to both these parks every day, regardless of whether we want to or not.
We're going to traverse just because I paid for it.
Exactly. So, and when we got on the Hogsmeade side, the line was pretty short. That was great. It was not a problem. We were en route pretty quickly, and we made it over to the Universal Studios side a few minutes before lunch, but not too much before lunch.
So, okay.
Keep an eye, because they did not want hot and cranky people.
Right, right.
And so
that would have people.
And so we got over there. And like I said, we went to Leaky Cauldron after, of course, practicing some more spells.
Of course.
Looked around in the shops. Did a lot of just perusing of things.
Right, right. It's the whole absorbing the atmosphere thing still going on.
Exactly. It's like, oh, if I were going to Hogwarts, I would need these things. they were really, you know, taking on the roles, I think. And I think that Universal could probably make some money doing a kids club. We have some of the team members just, you know, act as counselors and just take a group of kids around.
Not get on any rides at all. Just roam around.
Get a credit card number from the parents. Take them around shopping a little bit with a, you know, hard limit. Just walk them around, shop, get them outfitted for their journey to Hogwarts. Maybe, you know, buy them an owl, whatever. And then leave the parents some time to, you know, go and have a drink.
Sit in the Hogshead Tavern and, you know,
ride the roller coaster,
a beer,
that sort of thing. And so I think they're leaving money on the table there. But but that really seemed to be one of the girls were actually interested in, was just sort of doing some pretend play about, you know, oh, if we were going to Hogwarts, we'd be doing this stuff at these places, and really just enjoying that part of the experience.
All right. All right. Okay. Now you mentioned specifically the, you know, Leaky Cauldron. Anything else on the Diagon Alley side that, you know, stood out? Did you get a chance to ride the Gringotts, the bank train or whatever?
Yes. Yes, I did. The kids would not ride it, actually. They did like seeing the dragon breathe fire outside. Okay. There's a giant dragon statue on top of the ride building.
Right.
They would definitely get excited for that. So they did spend a good bit of time outside spectating to see.
Waiting for him to breathe fire.
Waiting for the fire breathing and the blast of heat that comes off of that, because it's not hot enough.
But talk about what you thought about the Gringotts attraction.
Well, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good ride. I mean, honestly, it's immersive, first of all. I think it's pretty simple. I mean, it doesn't try to cram in everything. So it has the benefit, I think, of going second for the thrill rides that are based on the Harry Potter books, because it basically sets out to do one thing.
And it contents itself with telling just that one story.
Yes, exactly. The Curie is great again. I think they do a phenomenal job with the theming for the Curie areas, for at least for these rides. And it, I think, really just hit all the good points, both for being a thrill ride and for being a Harry Potter experience.
Right, right. All right. So here's the question that I find myself coming back to. You mentioned that you spent, you know, a full second day in the Universal Parks. So talk about that. Like, how did you, what did you do with yourself for a second day?
It was a lot of, you know, walking around in both the Harry Potter areas. We actually ended up doing the Minions ride. That was the other ride that they wanted to do.
Oh, okay. So you did get them on something else.
Did get them on one ride. But aside from that, it was really an exercise in a lot of walking around and enjoying the atmosphere.
Okay.
Which is what they wanted to do. So I didn't have a big beef with that. I think maybe we could have cut it down to one day and just done the stuff that they wanted to do and headed over to Disney and had an extra day over there. But I also didn't want to leave anything on the table. So if something had come up the second day, they would have liked to have done, that would have been great too. But we did spend, you know, entire days at these parks, and they did get a lot out of it, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I guess what's most interesting to me about this exchange is that it does sound clearly like, you know, they felt like they had a great experience out of it. And, mm-hmm. and I get the impression that, you know, they were certainly thrilled that they got to spend a second day in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And like I said, they got to do a ride that was geared toward them. It hit them, I think, right in the right spot for something that they enjoy. They like the Minions, and it wasn't too crazy. It wasn't a thrill ride like the other things were thrill rides.
Right, right.
Not scary, but just fun.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah. And you said that you kind of had a very short third day in the parks at Universal before, heading across to Disney. How did you kind of work your transition day? Because this, you know, the resort hopping person in me always wants to know how somebody else manages it and to see whether other people find out ways to do it more smoothly than I.
Oh, no, we basically just cleared out on that, I guess, Tuesday morning. Is that right?
Yeah, sounds right.
Tuesday morning, we just really cleared out early. I asked them if they wanted to do something at the parks. They really did not want to do anything at the parks.
Okay.
We basically just got all our stuff together, got the car packed up, and got ourselves on the road over to Saratoga Springs.
So before we get to Disney, I want to go ahead and do a kind of a mini wrap up here of the Universal side. So, if you're going back and saying, you know, this was the thing, right? This was the thing that's the standout that they're going to remember and that you're going to remember about the Universal experience. What's that thing? What's the take home?
The take home, I think it'll be vastly different things between, my perspective and the girl's perspective. I think that they're going to remember being Hogwarts students for a couple of days. I mean, really, that was where their heads were.
Yeah.
They that's what they wanted to be. I mean, that's kind of what they embodied while they were there.
Okay.
And that sort of imaginative play and being surrounded by a great setting for that imaginative play,
sure,
really was their jam for this part of the trip, at least.
Okay. Okay.
For me, it was really a lot of trying to process Universal because I am not a Universal guy.
Right, sure.
So I was trying to sort of synthesize what I knew about the Disney theme parks into strategies for dealing with the Universal parks.
Okay.
Because I had had high hopes of using our front of the line passes to ride rides, but the girls didn't want to ride rides. So looking back on it, it might have been a better play to just stay at on the Disney side the whole time, even though we didn't get, we wouldn't have had early park admission or the front of the line unless we paid extra for it. But those things didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. I think you may have used
would have paid for parking, but you know what? It would have been cheaper than.
Yeah, with DVC, I would not have been going out of pocket for a hotel room, especially for that first night when we weren't in the parks that day, so it was kind of
just a place to crash that it was close to the park, so that's where you were.
Exactly. So
it's an interesting point. I mean, if you're not going to use it, if you're not going to be on those attractions where that express pass is going to make a difference, then, maybe that is a place to save some money.
Yeah. And, I think there are a lot of things I would have done differently about this trip had I known what was going to happen. Go back and do it over again. I can think of at least 20 changes I probably would have made. But yeah, what I learned was that Universal isn't, for my girls right now at least, a 2-day or more park. It just isn't.
Right. They're kind of right in between the you know, audiences it serves best.
Exactly. And I, you know, it's one of those things where I didn't know how it was going to end up. I thought that my older daughter especially would want to do more thrill rides. The younger daughter is even more of a risk taker. So she'd be trying to stretch a little bit to, you know, try to be of the appropriate height to ride a lot of things, but there just wasn't that drive for them. So what we ended up with was, again, a lot of shopping and a lot of these sort of immersive experiences that...
Welcome to tween girls.
That let them play. So, that's my post-mortem is that... I spent money that I probably shouldn't have.
Okay.
Fair enough. It was a learning experience.
So. Yes. All right. Well, you did move on over to Disney and you had this sort of short stop at Saratoga Springs on your way to Animal Kingdom Lodge, courtesy of late shifts in your schedule, I guess.
Exactly.
But, you know, had you stayed at Saratoga recently?
I had stayed there for Marathon Weekend, not this year, but the previous year. So,
okay. Not too long ago.
Not too long ago. It always seems to have availability for DVC rooms. So
that's huge.
And because I was making changes at the last minute, I was, you know, down to that or really nothing. It was the choice of last resort, but it was the last resort, in fact. But it worked out great, mostly because of its proximity to Disney Springs.
Oh, that's so, perfect segue, because that's exactly what I was going to ask about. It, you know, awfully convenient on your transfer day, which is often a day where, you know, you don't end up being in a park or anything like that. You have that, you know, brand new bridge, footbridge taking you across to Disney Springs.
Yes, you do. And actually, we got there around lunchtime. Everybody's hungry. We ate at Saratoga Springs in the quick service restaurant there. And then went and got on and used the boat transport actually to Downtown Disney because it was operating then.
Sure. And it's hot and it's, you know.
It's hot. It's a fun ride over. Yeah. So we took the boat over and headed to Ghirardelli because we needed dessert, of course, after.
Of course.
Having lunch. And kicked around there for a bit. And, you know, generally had a pretty good time.
So do you have an overall sort of impression at this point? I mean, I guess you've been down there now probably a couple of times since most of the renovations were done and now pretty much everything was done. So what's your overall sense of the, you know, atmosphere there in Disney Springs sort of post-transformation?
I really like it. I like what they've done. I like the expansion of space down there. Certainly the new restaurants are great. I've eaten it at Morimoto Asia now, which is fantastic. Really enjoyed that. The old standbys like Earl of Sandwich and Wolfgang Puck Express that I like are there still. And you know, overall, there are a lot of opportunities there that just weren't there before. I mean, since, you know, you got the movie theater online now, you got bowling. If you want bowling, you can do that. It just gives a lot more options in terms of entertainment.
Right.
You don't have to pay park entry. Exactly. You don't have to pay park entry for.
Yeah. All right. So that's the Disney Springs piece. Now you're only at Saratoga Springs, what, one night, two nights?
Actually, we're there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night. Uh-oh. So
you had several nights at Saratoga before.
Yeah, three nights. And yeah, it's just how it worked out. We already had the weekend booked in, which was their tail end weekend after coming back from Universal at Animal Kingdom. So this just sort of moved everything
right
in a block over. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you've got I assume a park day the next morning.
Yeah, we head to Animal Kingdom the next morning because everybody in my party loves animals, and also wanted to try out Tiffin's, which is the new signature restaurant.
Right.
And the Nomad Lounge, which is associated with it.
Yes. So I'm curious because I think it's very interesting that your transition really from Universal Parks to Disney Parks also meant you were transitioning from sort of a focus on immersive themed experience over on the Universal side to the Disney Park that really most embodies that somewhat similar attitude, right? Of the immersive themed experience park where the park itself is the experience.
Yeah. It definitely puts you in an interesting place. I think that may be even more the case. Looking at how Avatar Land, whatever you think of Avatar Land, the way it's coming together is, looks pretty impressive just from the small glances that you're able to get at this point. But, that will certainly be an interesting and looks to be very immersive experience there. The rest of the park is again, has been my favorite park generally. There's a lot of stuff to do. I like the edutainment aspects of it. And it's got some good rides there. So,
I want to talk in a minute about Tiffin's because I'm excited to get our first real review of Tiffin's and Nomad Lounge because Dave Jewart was headed that way and it didn't end up working out for him. So we haven't heard about it yet. I want to, before we get into that maybe in depth, just talk a little bit about highlights for this particular trip of Disney's Animal Kingdom. What things, stood out in and around the park on this particular trip?
All the girls, both the girls riding Expedition Everest, always a good thing. The more roller coasters, the better. With my younger daughter, actually rode a water ride, which given our discussion yesterday evening about water rides, is not my favorite thing to do. And that was informed by this trip, but it was a lot of fun just to ride that with her.
Things we do for our children.
Yeah, exactly. She was up for it. My older daughter wasn't. So I said, I'd do it. But it ended up being a lot of fun with her just because she was so happy about everything, including getting soaked and me getting soaked. So,
And she's nine?
She's nine, yes.
Okay, so that's about right, because I have a very distinct memory of Michaela riding Kali River Rapids, and just because of the way the boat turned, everybody in our family got soaked except her.
Sure.
And she was really offended by that. So when we got off, I don't know if you noticed, because you managed to get wet on the attraction itself, but just outside the attraction, sort of on the other side of the pathway there's a little fountain. She immediately headed to the fountain and stuck her head in it because she decided that she needed to be good and wet like we were.
Of course.
And it was right about that same age. I think she was 8 or 9.
Yeah. So those are good. I mean, actually riding rides was nice at this point because the girls have been there several times, so they aren't as, I think, hit by the immersive aspects of it.
Sure.
And they don't have characters to play at this point. They're not, playing princess there. Yeah. And until you get to Hollywood Studios, which we'll come back to that, but that's the next day. But outside of that, they're really not there playing roles. They're just there enjoying themselves.
Right.
And
all right. So Everest and Cali stood out, and you got to, you know, check out the new dining experience at Disney's Animal Kingdom. Talk a little bit about, Nomad Lounge and Tiffin's.
Okay. These are really incredibly well-themed restaurants, or, you know, restaurant and lounge, I guess. The Tiffin is set up as it's Tiffin, not Tiffin's, but anyway, Tiffin is, it has different rooms, has a few different rooms, three different rooms, I think, where Imagineers who went out and did research for basically putting together Animal Kingdom, they brought back sort of artifacts and keepsakes from the trip, and those are all over the walls. So you've got...
They cleared off their curio shelves and, you know, brought them into work.
Exactly. So you got tchotchkes up all over the place, but they're really nice tchotchkes. So they've got one room that's sort of focused on Africa, one on Asia, one on South America. And it's really neat just to look at these rooms. They did a great job, I think, laying out the artwork. In a way, I was even more impressed by Nomad Lounge, which is a place where you want to lounge. They've got a lot of low seating, so like couches, cushions, a lot of what you call, I guess, social seating. So you can have a big group sit down and sort of pull chairs up and just hang out for a while you're waiting on a table, or just be there. They've got a great...
I already love the fact that you mentioned that it's set up so that people can kind of sit down and pull up chairs. Because one of the things I've noticed about a lot of the lounges, not necessarily just Walt Disney World, but in and around Orlando, is that they seem to have lots of seating areas, but for whatever reason, I commonly run into situations where the seats are bolted in place, right? So you can't really adjust seating. There's in Disney Springs, the really cool bar area that's kind of on the boat.
Okay.
Well, the tables and chairs are bolted to the floor of the boat. So if you sit on the perimeter, there's like one person can sit with you and that's it. You can't look at anybody else because you can't pull a chair around. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love that already that, you know, Tiffin's is a lounge where people want, you said it perfectly, a lounge where people actually want to lounge.
Yeah. And the staff in Nomad Lounge was great. The four of us just pulled up at a table to wait. We're kind of looking back out toward where the Avatar stuff is being built. So you see sort of, you know, floating rocks being built. But, and then we had, again, great wait staff. I got an adult beverage.
One of their specialty ones, or?
I actually can't remember what I had, but it was very tasty. And
enough of them that you can't remember what you had.
No, I'm trying to remember. And I think it was... was not the Night Monkey, although that was a fantastic name for a drink. but might have been the Hightower Rocks, which is the tequila and watermelon drink. Sounds right.
You know what? On behalf of Terry Hawkins, I'm going to ask. You said it's tequila and watermelon. Is it like sweet flesh watermelon, or is it sort of sour pickled watermelon rind flavor?
No, it's the sweeter one.
Okay. Hear that, Terry? There's actually a watermelon drink at Nomad Lounge that you'll enjoy. He tried the watermelon drink at Dawa Bar, that's part of the Sunrise cocktail menu. mm-hmm. but it's more the pickled rind watermelon okay. flavor. Thoroughly unpleasant, I believe, was the way he did it.
And this also has Casa Dragones tequila, so.
Well, yes. So it's got something else going for it.
Yes, exactly. Let's see. My younger daughter got something, you know, fruity and sweet to drink. My girlfriend got, I think, water, and the server asked if she wanted it with a slice of pineapple, which
interesting.
Which was interesting. And immediately my older daughter wanted one of those. It's a big wedge of pineapple in your water. So
so you get a snack with your water.
So it was a very nice touch as you're lounging.
Right.
And so that was really great. We hung out there for a while waiting for our table. I thought it was a fantastic experience, a great place. I would recommend it to anybody who finds himself over on that end of the park. And they've got some great, interesting drinks. If you're there with younger people or people who don't drink otherwise, then they've got sort of non-alcoholic versions of all their alcoholic drinks, like same ingredients, just omitting the alcohol. So
I noticed that, and I thought that was a really nice touch, because they are, you know, very much sort of specialty drinks that they dress up, and, you know, it lets somebody who's not drinking alcohol still kind of get to be part of that experience.
Right. And it may get the kids away from ordering their 75th Shirley Temple. But actually, I think that's what my younger daughter got anyway, but I think she got it with like 12 cherries and some other fruit in it. Then we got called back to the restaurant, to Tiffin.
Right.
And their menu is quite eclectic. We've got the stuff from all over. They've got... I guess kind of themed along you're an archaeologist out on a dig somewhere, but you're not sure where. So you've got different cuisines represented. You've got sort of African flavors. You've got Asian flavors. And it's just a matter of putting together what you want from, you know, whatever your taste happened to be.
Right. No, so there's my question. So were you able to find things that kind of, you know, fit for everybody's palates? Or is this one of those places where, you know, parents of kids who maybe are a little picky, you know, might want to look ahead and you know, see whether it really works for them?
They do have they don't have the usual kid stuff so much. They do have a vegetable pasta, so that's pretty much takes care of my kids.
Okay.
It's a vegetable pasta too, so it's my older daughter, who's a vegetarian, could get that. I think she instead, though, got the curry. The vegetable curry, but
and so that in and of itself is a little tip off there that, you know, even the vegetarians have multiple options that work for them.
Absolutely. And I'm sure if you tried, you could get them to make you something else if those didn't particularly suit your needs. Sure. I put together just some appetizers, really, because I thought the appetizers looked more interesting than some of the entrees, especially. Okay. Things like the grilled octopus, which was fantastic. And they also have a bread service, kind of like they do at
Sanaa?
At Sanaa, or Jiko even has a smaller one, but
this
sort of is a smaller combo of the two. So you've got the soft breads, the hard breads, and a few different dips. So they're kind of giving a nod to those things, but it's not sort of the grand experience that you get over at Sanaa, especially.
Okay.
And let's see, the They also had a beet salad as well, which was really good.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I just kind of put together, you know, enough appetizers to fill me up. Mm-hmm. Overall, the food was really good. I have no complaints about that. We had probably the worst server I've ever had
at
a Disney restaurant, which was a very sad thing. So that really put a damper on the experience for me, but hopefully I'll get a different table next time.
That just because it was slow service or not competent service? What was the issue?
He just seemed kind of annoyed that he had to be there at all.
That's less than ideal.
Yeah, and especially with my older daughter, who's kind of soft-spoken, she was ordering. It's like, what? I can't hear you at all. What? And just being really kind of churlish to her, I think. Mm-hmm. And at one point, she asked for the water with the pineapple in it because she thought that was just something that they did at this place. Sure. And he rolled his eyes at her. So I was just left with a really, really bad feeling about that particular server. I try not to let it spill over onto the whole restaurant because, like I said, it's great theming. It's an interesting menu. But, dude.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be dealing with children, you're going to need to up the game a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. But it sounds like overall, Tiffin's was a good thing.
Yeah, I definitely would do it again. And there are probably some entrees that I would try on the next go around. But I thought that sort of the trying a bunch of different appetizers was a good way to get introduced to a lot of what they're doing there.
Sure.
In terms of preparation and flavors.
Yeah, and the various small plates options do really sound like nice options.
They are, yeah.
And just a good way to get to kind of taste the whole menu.
Yeah, split them with other adults at the table or even with the kids if the kids are adventurous enough to eat octopus.
Right. All right. So that's Animal Kingdom. Your next day, you mentioned you were on to Hollywood Studios and your kid's character inkling turned.
Yes. They are hugely into Star Wars at this point. So for about a week before this trip, they were talking about Jedi Training Academy.
Right.
Almost exclusively, they were talking about Jedi Training Academy. And really, that's maybe too much of a focus for them because by the time we got in and we got back to sign up, we're trying to find a time to do it. And they wanted to do it as soon as possible.
Right.
Unfortunately, as soon as possible was like at 12:30.
Ouch.
So I'm like
unshaded.
Yeah.
Area. Yeah.
And we had dinner reservations at like 6:15 too. So, I wasn't sure when it would be cool enough actually to do this, but they were insistent that they could handle it. They wanted to do this. It would be fine if I didn't let them do this as soon as possible. It would ruin their lives.
Of course.
I'm like, all right, fine. We'll watch for signs of heat stroke, and there are air conditioned spots around if they need to avail themselves of it. But
right.
A lot of the rest of the morning was walking around and in the sort of Star Wars area where they have the character meet and greet.
Right, over in the launch bay.
Taking pictures with Jawas.
Did you get a chance to trade?
I'm sorry?
Did they get a chance to trade with the Jawas?
They did not. I think that they were just mostly interested in hugging them, but I don't know if that's allowed. And I got to meet Chewbacca, which was just cause for great smiles.
Yes, always.
That was probably what made the trip for them, honestly. eventually we ended up doing Star Tours to kill some time. And then it was their turn for Jedi Training Academy.
All right.
Which involved getting them in robes.
Yep, in the robed summer, up.
And ready to fight dark side villains.
Now, had they done Training Academy before?
They actually had. So they'd been there with their mother back during spring break.
Okay.
So they had one go at this already. Okay.
And even in the, they'd had a go at it in the new format.
Yeah. In that built up area there that they've done to host it. They had a great time with it. They, despite the heat, they had sleeves rolled up. They had the robes, open to try to vent as much heat as possible. But, I tried to keep them hydrated before with cold water.
Yeah.
Or whatever cold drinks, because, water, who wants to drink that? but they did enjoy it. So, they made it through. They were hot at the end, but they were very happy that they got a chance to do it. I would suggest, getting there as early as possible, getting the earliest slot as possible. If you're going in the summer, just because some of the kids out there were really miserable.
I mean, I tell people all the time, do it first thing or you're rolling dice.
Yeah.
Because you really have two threats, right? One is that it gets intensely hot out there. Mm-hmm. And, we've done it once where we got pushed towards almost noon and I thought my son was going to melt.
Yeah.
So you've got that threat. And then the other issue is that even a few drops of water from, something resembling rain, on that stage, and they cancel the show because it is raised up, and the last thing that they want to deal with is some 5-year-old in Crocs, slipping off the edge of a stage.
Of course, yeah. There was no rain at that time, but some clouds did roll through just enough to cover the sun a little bit at times. But
well, that's at least one better, a little respite.
Just a little though. It was really hot, and like I said, some of the other kids out there were just really visibly in peril, I think. I don't think they let anything get unsafe. I think they did walk one kid over to his parents when he was asked,
"Gonna drop?
Are you okay? Do you want to go see your mom or whatever?" And
yeah,
they walked him over and off the stage, which was, I thought, a good thing. And I was kind of waiting to see if it was going to happen to my kids, but they got through it fine. None the worse for wear. Had to go cool them down with more frozen beverages, but that was fine with them.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that sounds good. So you kind of had a Star Wars morning, on right up until your kind of noon hour time. And you had a dinner reservation, you said, around 6:15. So what are you doing in between there?
In between there, again, we were doing a lot of kind of walking around and shopping, really. Girls like the shopping in the Star Wars themed, what is it? Is it Watto's? Whatever. Anyway, the gift shop at the end of Star Tours. So we spent a good bit of time in there just looking around, mostly putting together some lightsabers that they did not buy, but they're fun to put together and play with the little, I guess, Lego figures.
Like the droid factory figures?
Yeah, exactly. So did a good bit of that, which is fine. It was inside. It was out of the heat. Really, it was a pretty calm and quiet afternoon. We really didn't have anybody who wanted to do, again, roller coasters.
Okay. So much,
but we did get a Rock and Roller Coaster ride in.
Or at least Erica got a Rock and Roller Coaster ride in.
Well, yeah. It's like just play pretty long. And, you know, it's they at least. My older daughter had been through it when they were down with their mom, but both of them got on this time around, which was good. We skipped Tower of Terror, skipped Toy Story, Midway Mania. And really it was, again, mostly a laser-like focus.
Right, all about the Star Wars.
On the Star Wars. And we ended up having dinner at Hollywood Brown Derby, which was good for everybody. It's, you know, the usual. It's a good, solid meal all the time.
Sure.
And
did anything in particular stand out this time around?
Not I can think of. I mean, I got the Cobb salad, which is always a good thing. That's their one of their signature dishes, I guess. And it's what I always get. I'm not very creative when it comes to Hollywood.
Okay. All right. And now talk to me about evening entertainment. Did you do Fantasmic this time around? Did you check out the new fireworks show?
We did not, actually. We ended up calling it an early night. Mostly the weather was a little threatening.
Okay.
Which kind of got back and got out of the weather, more or less. There was some talk about going to the pool, which kind of drove us back to the resort. But when we got there, it was, you know, the weather was not cooperating. So
okay.
We just kind of called it a night.
All right. So you've got two parks left to go. Are you wrapping up on the Magic Kingdom or on Epcot?
Magic Kingdom was the next day. So
okay. So let's hit Magic Kingdom, and then we'll wrap up with Epcot, just like your trip did.
Okay.
So talk to me about, again, you know, highlights. I mean, there's not a lot new in Magic Kingdom these days, but for the first time in quite a while, we don't have Magic Kingdom in the midst of massive construction. So there is that benefit. So what stood out about this particular trip to the Magic Kingdom?
Well, I think the one thing that was new for me, ate at Skipper's Canteen.
Oh, nice.
Which again has kind of an odd menu, I guess. Not typical theme park dining, but it does have some interesting dishes available if you're into that sort of thing. If you're not into that sort of thing, you've got, you know, I guess some more mainstream options. There's really nothing that's too off the rails, but there are some preparations that are different from what you might expect.
Right.
And of course it's themed along the Jungle Cruise lines, so you've got puns on the menu, and you've got you have the Kungaloosh.
At the dessert,
actually,
yeah, be alcohol free.
That brings back the Adventurers Club for those who are big fans of that.
So, what was your overall take? You know, you ate at a couple of new restaurants on this particular trip. You know, Skipper's Canteen was new, Tiffin was new. Which of the two are you most likely to return to?
It's going to be Tiffin, I think. Definitely Nomad Lounge, but Tiffin probably too, just because they do have other stuff there. I think that Skipper's Canteen is a nice addition. I don't if you don't want usual theme park food, then it's certainly a good option. But I didn't think it was quite in my wheelhouse enough to go there instead of somewhere else, like, you know, Columbia Harbor House, which I always find really good.
See, and that's interesting because you compared it to, a good quick service choice, where Skipper's Canteen, you know, not only is a table service restaurant, but you're paying table service prices for it.
Yep. And they're not that many. I mean, for table service restaurants at lunchtime, there are limited choices. It's, I don't know. I'd put it up probably right behind Crystal Palace, but I'm not really wedded to that order.
Okay.
For sit down meals, but I think that I could do just as well with a quick service.
All right.
At least in Magic Kingdom.
Okay, fair enough. And anything else about Magic Kingdom that, you know, really stood out, or was it just, you know, your average fun family day in the Magic Kingdom?
I'd say, yeah, pretty fun average day, I guess. It was interesting to go through with the girls, both of them completely out of the princess phase. So there was really nothing drawing them to any of the princess themed rides or experiences. Their last time I was there with them, they were both really into the Belle character experience.
Yeah.
But this time they just didn't care so much. So that was,
The phase has passed.
Yep. So
I don't see you looking all that wistful.
Yeah, it's good. I like that they're on the Star Wars side of things now. That's really handy.
Right. So you wrapped up your trip. By this time you've moved yourselves over to Animal Kingdom Lodge.
Yes.
Anything, you know, stand out about the transition from Saratoga to Animal Kingdom?
Not really. They brought all our stuff over for us, which was really nice. I wanted to see how that really worked. It was a nice way to take advantage of somebody else moving stuff, not having to pack it all in the car and unpack it later. And they handled the stuff that needed to be refrigerated great.
Oh, nice. See, that's a good question, because I would have been concerned about that.
Yeah, I've got insulin that needs to be refrigerated, or at least not out in the Florida heat, or else it will not work anymore. So
that would be good.
I said, put this cooler bag in the refrigerator, and he did that, brought it over, put it back in the fridge on the other side, and life was good. So I could go and be in a park all day and then come back to my room later on and have everything just as it needed to be. So it was really a seamless experience. I was very happy with that.
Nice. And then you had your final park day at Epcot. Nice place to wrap up. And a lot new happening in Epcot, so probably a good place for us to be wrapping things up. Talk about the things at Epcot that, you know, stood out, with all kinds of new things popping up.
Well, we did Soarin', for one thing. That's new, obviously. Soarin' Around the World. The first time my older daughter rode that, it was one of her first experiences at the park. Well, she got off the ride and said, "That was awesome." So that was many years ago, but she was, even though she's a tween now and, jaded and stuff, she still seemed pretty impressed by it. Cool. We tried out Mission Space for the first time, the wimpy side.
Okay. You rode green. I was going to ask.
But I just wasn't sure how it was going to work out. And they had fun with that too. So, and I think they enjoyed it being more of an interactive experience, like they get to do something during the run.
Which is missing. Don't really seem to do much. It's still fun to think you have to push them.
Exactly. But it got them engaged and a bit more immersed in what they're doing. I think, I guess the overall impression of most of these things is they like to be doing stuff instead of maybe just passively riding a ride. They want to be interacting with something, whether it's, the wands and the spell outcomes over the Harry Potter world, or piloting a spacecraft and mission space. They want to be taking part in their experiences more than having them be passive. So,
makes sense.
So yeah, I think that that's just the stage where they are. And I eventually figured that out. And, so that worked out really well. And again, there's some space themed things over there. So that was good. We avoided the Frozen ride because they didn't care so much.
Interesting. Okay. So no review of Frozen Ever After.
Well, I just wrote it actually the other day, but,
Okay. So you did get a chance to ride.
I did, but not with the daughters.
Okay. Well, so I even though it's separate and not technically part of the same trip, I still think that we need to hear the scoop. So what did you think of it? And, I'm not even going to ask, is it worth a 5-hour standby? Because the answer is no, nothing is worth a 5-hour standby. But.
But no, it was about a 53-minute standby.
Okay.
And what they're doing with the animatronics there is pretty amazing. The fluidity of the motion on the characters is so far beyond like Hall of Presidents that it's really not even a fair comparison. The ride itself is, if you've been on Maelstrom, you pretty much know what happens, but
right.
The rest of it is kind of entertaining. If you are sick of the Frozen songs, then it's not going to be the best experience for you. But I think what really blew me away really was the animatronics. And it's perfectly good ride. I had a margarita by that point, which was I think only helped the experience. But I don't know if I'd give it a lot more than an hour of wait time. I mean, it's almost impossible to find a fast pass, I think, for it these days within even a month.
Yeah, it's pretty tight. And I suspect, I don't have any data to back it up, but I think that they're intentionally restricting the number of fast passes they're distributing because they've had so many breakdowns that they just can't comfortably predict how many people they're going to be able to get through the queue.
Yeah, I certainly believe that. And I think it has gotten better. I'm not sure how many of those 5-hour waits at the beginning were just because they were trying to figure things out in terms moving people, that many people at least. But it went smoothly. The queue area is neat. There's a cute little thing with Wandering Oaken's sauna there as you go through. That's entertaining at least. So it's solid. It's not the ride it used to be, really, because the theming is so different.
Sure,
but it's worth trying out. I'm a little sorry that the girls didn't try it at all, just because I think they probably would have enjoyed it. I mean, just if for nothing else than for Olaf.
So here's the question for somebody who enjoyed Maelstrom. Mm-hmm. Is it a worthy replacement?
It depends on what you want to get out of it. I mean, it's if you hate Frozen, then no. if you have any affinity at all for the movie or the characters, then yeah, I think it's going to work for you. Especially if you are, like I was, kind of intrigued and impressed by the audio animatronic figures that they've got.
Right. And at least one Marguerite in.
And like I said, you know, the fucking comments of the
All right. So, and anything else about Epcot in particular on this trip that stood out, you know, good, bad, and different, but, you know, that sticks in your memory?
Not really, no. I think that, again, we spent a lot of more time up at the front of the park than I usually do on these trips. Again, in the past, it's been a lot of going to Akershus and, you know, having breakfast with princesses.
right, and trying to time the 15 minutes that Snow White's actually there in Germany.
Yeah, and it just wasn't happening. That was not what they were into. So, no, it was really a sea change from how I've approached the park before. And they're getting a little more into the sort of foods around the world thing, which is always interesting. I probably won't be taking them back for Food and Wine Festival, but there are options there that they might actually enjoy at this point.
All right. So we've covered, you know, all four parks. We talked earlier about the Universal side. So thinking just about the Disney piece of this trip, what are the things that are going to be the big takeaways from this one that when you're, you know, 5 years down the road, this is the thing that is going to stick in your head as being from that, you know, summer 2016 trip with the girls?
On the Disney side of things, yeah. I think most of it is going to be about their Star Wars engagement, like how much they wanted to see these characters. They wanted to be a part of that universe. That was really striking, especially in the launch bay area, mm-hmm. where they would see a character, they would be so excited to see them. Even Kylo Ren, you know, they had some trepidation, but yeah. Still just, it was mostly like melodramatic. They were
they were playing it up just like he was.
This is how I'm supposed to be with this person, but I'm really kind of excited.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's a big takeaway from the Disney and just them being over all the princesses except for Leia. So
okay. Well, that sounds great. You know, thanks, Eric, so much for coming back and sharing your trip with us. I think that there are a bunch of us with tweens who you know, are dealing with the same balance, and it does kind of change your approach sometimes.
Absolutely, and it's less getting up early too. You know,
okay,
trying to get people out of bed and motivated to get to the parks early is just a lot harder, I'm finding now that they're not up at the crack of dawn just because they're young,
right. And
too excited about attacking whatever's out there in the theme park. So yeah, it's a big change for me, big change for the girls.
Right. Well, we look forward to hearing back from the next travel adventure. I know that, you know, we set aside, there was a whole cruise piece to this too, but who knows, maybe we'll come back up later.
Very well then. Thanks very much, Aaron.
Thanks.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. Spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make.
I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer,